on how much we spend, CFO, on peacekeeping missions versus if you take it with the member today, how much we spend versus the reinvestments that we get for this. I must say in advance that in cases where we do not have information here, we do undertake to provide the information in writing later. The challenges, if I can give challenges, just about why certain policies were not finalized. You have the ethics policy, the international affairs, the defense, the HR development one. Most of those some of them had to incorporate the functions as they are now in the defense review. So we are seeking to have alignment between the policies that we had already started with what is in the defense review. May I indicate again to members that the defense, the implementation of the implementation of the defense review started in 2016. The year under review was a planning year. And therefore, some of the questions that have been raised by members on the defense review, we will not be in a position to provide you with answers now, because you will get those in the identified deliverables when we report on the identified deliverables in the 2016 year. Chair, we do take it that the requirement, Member Gameda, about how we plan to come down to 40-30-30. Again, this is the work that is included in the implementation of the defense review. So for me to come up now and say, here is exactly how we're doing it, we'll be jumping the gun. What we have done with the defense review is that the logic we're following is that there will be policies, there will be strategies, there will be plans to address all the areas that need addressing. And therefore, that will then form the basis for your implementation of Milestone 2. We do take it again, and I'm giving an overall comment here, that yes, we do accept and agree, and we've indicated up front that you will not be able to implement Milestone 1 without injection of additional funding. We accept that. We have said that up front. The department was clear from the beginning. But what we are saying is that there are those deliverables or interventions that you can still manage within budget, and then we'll start by doing that. The costed milestone, the costed a plan for Milestone 1, yes, you are hearing about it. Yes, it might not help you for now to tell you that we have two packages, one that requires injection of funds and the other one that can be done within budget. But the fact is, we are just showing you here how during this planning year we divided the work. The work on the costed Milestone 1 plan is at an advanced stage. We will be briefing or giving a comprehensive briefing to the PCD and all the other committees that will require such briefing on how we plan on implementing that. I was saying that the funding model is going to help the department to identify options of funding. Part of it, you did members make a presentation from AMSCO as part of looking at how we can provide alternative funding sources if we do not get a direct allocation. That will be comprehensive in our briefing once we are done with the costed plan of Milestone 1. We will be, in 2017, funds allowing indicating to members, we'll come back to you and indicate what is it that we will be able to include in the APP for 2017-2018. So with your permission, Chair, may I take those comments and questions that are to do with the defense review aside, because they can be, they will be dealt with comprehensively when we brief you on the costed plan. The issues of centralized procurement, I'll request the CFO to deal with that, because there is a plan to decentralize procurement, and CFO can talk to that. The scarce skills in the department, General Ramanswan, can you just brief as well, give just a broad overview of how we're dealing with that, understanding that currently we have different kinds of allowances, but again, this will be taken in the defense review as also a point of focus. What causes deviations in the procurement processes? I'll give it to the CFO to answer that. Safe to say that sometimes the nature of defense requires a quick intervention sometimes that forces you to have to procure, but that is not an excuse. The CFO will can talk on that, as well as the delegation instances where people go over their delegation. Why would we not comply with TPS, the preferential policy of a National Treasury, as we indicated that AMSCO decided on the 25%? For me, that was informed by a need to transform the industry. However, we have indicated that actually AMSCO has gone back to complying with the 10 and the 90-10 principle in the procurement process. Why contracts are cancelled? There are reasons, there are various reasons why we cancel contracts, and I'll give that to the CFO, and then to respond also on penalties. CFO first.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first one will be a centralized procurement. Chairperson, as a DOD, we are looking at the process of decentralizing the procurement through all the units, because we realize that to use only the CPSC in Pretoria, it hinder our speedy deployment as well. So we are busy looking into that. As the department, of which it should be at an advanced stage as we speak right now. The other one, Chairperson, is the deviation from the policies. Chairperson, sometimes it's not the intention of the department to deviate from the policy. Sometimes it's the understanding, is the technicality of the understanding. If I'm looking at it, the chairperson might look to say in terms of irregular expenditure, because it amounts from the deviation sometimes. If one can make one example on the PPFA, that deviation amounted from the policy that AMSCO had. As we know that AMSCO is one of our agents as a DOD. So on that one, they follow the 25%, whereas the PFMA require 90-10 principle. After AG has raised this, and then AMSCO came back to say, okay, fine, we will use the one that is on the PFMA. It was not intentional. So that one, that's why we managed to get even the treasury to condone it. The other one, Chairperson, I needed to state it to this to the department, you know, to the council that term. The department does not have any intention to deviate to any of the policies. It might be an understanding of it. I will link it to that one because the one that Chair, Honorable Member Kamete asked, I will link with the one that Mr. Isao also commented on, as well as Mr. Mare commented on, because it might have a linkage. If you look in terms of the material misstatement, where does it come from? It comes from the deviation as well, if one might look at it. And also the reviewer, what Mr. Issa was talking about, deeply on the senior management. If one look, when you present the financial statement on the 31st of May, during the audit, we made a certain adjustment on the asset register, more specially, as we might know that we got a lot of projects that are in progress. So those projects that are in progress on the financial statement, we did not report it as a cash additions on the financial statement. It's not that the financial statement were not reviewed as in terms of Section 40 of the PFMA. It was not that, it was not done. But it was not included on the financial statement because it was not the project that were completed. Now, AG was saying, in terms of the PFMA, you should be provide, when you submit the financials, it should be accurate without any adjustment. It was merely deviation, or the accounting officer did not do the reviewer. The reviewer was done at all level, It was done on the level of the accountancy. It was done on the level of the CFO. It was done on the level of the audit committee. It was done on the level of the internal audit. It was also done as a committee. So in all level, it was that because the asset register, we would have not, when the AG picked it up, that no, this was supposed to be disclosed. And then we said, no, we can't go and change. We had to go and change the financial statement based on that late information. That's what it is. It's not that the department did not follow or adhere to any of the law. And also, the other one that I need to explain it to it. Which one that is left on the room? The other one that was asked by the Honorable Member Kamede, in terms of the 30 days payment. The department chairperson is doing everything that we would like to see that all our creditors are paid. We even gone to the extent to say, let's engage other departments as well to assist us, including National Treasury. I will explain why we engage even to that level. Because of some of the problem is the legacy systems. It's the legacy systems that we are using, Chairperson. In terms of legacy system, you find that some of these, the system that we are using, sometimes it got a downtime, even for the whole week, because it's old. When I'm not going to put here as an excuse, that's why we are engaging with other departments to assist us as well. If the system is down towards the end of the month, you'll find that some of those invoices are not going to be paid. It's not that we want not to pay them. It's because of the system that we are using is the legacy system, is the old system. When all other departments, Chairperson, when all other departments were moving from FMS, FMS was instituted in 1983 in government. In 1999-2000, all other departments change to the new system that will take the requirement of the PFMA. Only the DOD that did not able to change. That one is cashing with us right now, because the requirement of the PFMA is required somewhere, whereas the system that we are using, it's not compatible. Those are the challenges. The reason why I'm mentioning this, Chairperson, because immediately when you place an order and then you receive your POD when the goods are received, if I'm not matching, the system should kick it out, that invoice, immediately. But on the FMS, it doesn't do that. You need to go manually, to make sure that those invoices are the correct invoices. If you look on the invoices of 21,000 a month that we received, how long it can go, it take us to do manually. One of it, Chairperson, if you look to the financial statement on the annual report, look at the payables alone. On the payables alone, it might look as if the payables are very, very high. So it means if those payables were paid, it means we were going to overspend the budget. The answer is not, it's not true. It wasn't going to happen. Most of those invoices were not legitimate, because the law is saying, in terms of the PFMA, you must pay within 30 days all legitimate invoices. But most of those invoices that were outstanding were not legitimate, because we were still arguing with the suppliers, because you find that the quantity sometimes is not correct. Those are the things that it happened. Immediately when we got the new system, I can assure this committee that you'll see a huge improvement, of which the last email that we received from the chairperson of our task team to say it looked like we might be get help on the new system that will be compatible as well. So from that, it gives us a hope that all the suppliers we will be paying, because we're fully aware as we are sitting here that if we don't pay the suppliers the legitimate invoices, it might kill a certain suppliers, most especially the small businesses. We are trying by all means to make sure that all the invoices are paid within 30 days. Thank you, Chairperson.
General will cover the ones that have indicated, including the dockyard.
Thanks, Doctor. Chairperson, I'll start with the one of skills. I think honorable members will recall, at some point, the Secretary for Defense indicated and spoke a lot on skills in the department. Firstly, maybe to take honorable members a bit back, the department has been finding itself in a position where we could not compete with the market out there. And as a result, generally, there was mobility, there was people exiting to go out there because of some attractive incentives which they can find out there. And then the Minister of Defense, what she did, especially when it came to the issue of the medical services, she has put up a ministerial medical task team that came up with recommendations, of which those recommendations are being implemented today. But besides that, the department, therefore, is also working on skills audit to ascertain where are we found wanting and exactly in which post, etc., etc. Now, that's an exercise which is going on in the department. But you would know, honorable members, that we also have Optusano that's currently going on, and it is in three areas. One, landward. Two, it is in defense as well as in the military health services. And we have seen much progress. Now, what is important with it was to transfer the skills into our members, some of these things that relate to the physical doing of certain things. And we have seen remarkable achievements. There's been notable progress in this regard. We have as well, which I think honorable members is aware of, the department has taken to go into bilaterals with other countries, wherein we're looking at trying to send our people for such scarce skills. These are engineers, these are your technicians, these are your doctors, etc., etc. And in the minister's budget speech, she did give the exact figures in Parliament in a budget speech of 2015. She has done so, and she has, if I recall correctly, repeated it in 2016. I'm not so sure if that was repeated, but I'm very sure that in 2015 she did mention even giving the figures thereof. So that's where we are, and this would then translate to other functionalities. We spoke of the sea hours where the sea hours where we even made the relation of the sea hours to the capacity that's available in the dockyard. In the dockyard, you would need a force strength of about 1,000 people, no less than 1,000 in the dockyard. But what we have at present is in the region of about 400. Now, when you have that skills capacity, you could see in terms of you need to capacitate the dockyard, but that takes the skills which is what we are trying to do. But we need to say that as a department, we are proud and happy. We have repeated, Chairperson, that one of the ships that we repaired last year was repaired in South African soil fully, and that was a refit of the vessel, and that was Amatola, which we would recall, using the indigenous knowledge, the indigenous talent of South Africa, and we repaired the Amatola in South Africa. And that was historical. It was for the first time that we could do that. So it is an effort, it's part of the effort to say, well, we need to make use of the skills that are available in the country, which we would know. Part of that, if we are following up on Project Pakisa, part of that being related to this kind of efforts. Now, maybe I need to talk here as well about the issue with regards to flying hours. It will be the same as what I've said with regards to the Navy. But what is important for the department is there's something that we would not want to compromise, and that is flight safety. And flight safety is in relation to the aircraft itself. It's in relation to the crew of the aircraft. Those are issues we, the department, would not like to compromise on. But again, we need to note the fact that for us to achieve flying hours, it borders a lot on operational tasking. And those operational taskings, some of them are so unpredictable. To give you an example, humanitarian aid. You don't know when do you want, will there be a need for humanitarian aid. You don't know when will there be a need for disaster relief, etc., etc. And when we set the targets for these things, we set the targets, a benchmark on what has happened last year, but in the previous years. But I would want to say, if you look at the Navy's flying hours, sorry, sea hours, it was a major attempt. They have set 12,000 sea hours at sea, and they could achieve 10,000 plus. I cannot remember what was the figure. In the midst of the challenges, so this is why we were saying that there is probably a good story to tell along these lines. We might not have achieved our targets, but if you look at what the Navy has achieved in terms of the sea hours, I think that in comparison with how we've been doing previously, that for us was a good story to tell. And of course, we are not running away from the fact that there are challenges. Yes, there are challenges. And as we were saying, one of them being capacity, but I've already alluded to the fact that the department, this thing is taking it upon itself to make sure that we can do something about it. as I explained, the other question was the naval dockyard. Just to give you, just to say where we are with regards to the naval dockyard. In August, if I recall correctly, in August there was a signing of an agreement. That's the agreement with to say the operationalization of the dockyard will be under Denel with a certain phases that has to be undertaken prior to the complete takeover by Denel. And I think part of it, Chairperson, has been the need for commercialization under Denel, which is a new move, if I may say, with regards to the naval dockyard. Now, those steps, they have got to be undertaken before they can be fully handing over of the naval dockyard fully to Denel. And we foresee most probably that if I speak under correction, because there are other drivers which are external of the department, hopefully before the end of the financial year, all of these things would have been done. As I speak to the Navy themselves, they are very much hopeful and ambitious that most probably by December. But I would put it to say that most probably before the end of the financial year, we might be done with these ones. There was a question, Chairperson, that says, with your permission, about the 15 subunits, if whether these are foot on the ground or what is happening with those. The 15 subunit is foot on the ground. The issue about the deployment of the subunits is that when you have 15 subunits foot on the ground, you need to have 15 subunits in reserve, and you need to have 15 subunits in training. So in essence, you are talking about a force level of 45 subunits. So when we say 15 subunits, it has got multiplier effects in that regard. So that is what is foot on the ground, the 15 subunits. Dr. Gamed, I don't know if there's anything that I must respond to.
There was a question on the oversight on the classification, on the classified indicators. That is not, I must just clear this, that the oversight is not done by State Security. I was indicating here that the issue of auditing sensitive information is cluster issues, because it is a cluster matter that the cluster is trying to resolve with National Treasury, because there is an acknowledgement that there must be oversight, but that oversight must not compromise national security. So they are working at that level because they are working at that level with defense intelligence, the police, state security, national treasury, and even AXA is involved. The oversight, though, that the minister, the honorable member was talking about, when did we present to this committee or to the standing committee or any other committee? My understanding was that this can be done in a closed session. If the department is invited by the PCD to present, we can present, but we have in the past and we'll still request a closed session if this has to be done. It should be in a closed session. And I'm not sure very well about the vetting of members. I think members will understand more what it means to have a closed session and what are the requirements of a closed session. That can be done. I have indicated that all the questions that have to do with the defense review, let the drift on honorable members. It's not our intention to give you information in drip, but the DRIP stands ready to come and give you a comprehensive briefing. I said we do have a plan that is at an advanced stage, but we have a number of command bodies and it has to go through the command bodies. It has gone to the chief's work session. It was presented there. there will be a DOD work session in which it will be the main agenda of the DOD work session. Then it will go to the minister. So, but the work is at a very advanced stage, Chair. Then you will get, you can engage with us on everything, including the funding model. The employment of technology in the borders as a force multiplier, what are the instruments used? I'll leave that to General Ramaswamy. I will leave that to the General. The disability days, I wouldn't have information now on the exact detail there. Can we then provide you with members with a written response there, because members want to know who are those people first, and we wouldn't have the names there. But briefly, General Ramaswamy could indicate what happens when a member becomes permanently disabled and how that member is taken care of. But the detail of who it is and what happened to those people and how did they incur injury, Chair, we can only submit this in writing. The what we have, a member committee, honourable member, we do have the amounts that we have spent on peacekeeping. In the year under review, it was a 1.5 billion, and the previous year was 1.6 billion. What we wouldn't have here is the amount of reinvestment. But the CFO might have more information on that. If he has exact figures, I don't want him to mislead a PCD.
Thank you, Chairperson. The amount of reinvestment that we received is 286 from the UN, but the amount of claim that we submitted to the UN is 998. Last year, millions. We went to the UN to find out why they don't have to pay us, because it was quite a number of claims that were submitted. The Assistant Secretary General, who's in charge of finance, at the UN, said it's not the policy that when they receive invoices from the countries, they paid. They wait for the pledges. They work on pledges. If the money is available, then they will pay immediately. But at this moment, it's not yet, it's always available. So that is the procedure of the UN. Out of this, when we receive the amount from the UN, it goes to the revenue fund. It does not come back to defense. Out of the amount that we receive now, the amount of 182, which is appropriated back from Treasury to defense, not the whole amount. Thank you.
Chair, there were questions on the bills. We have the hydrographics bill and the military discipline bill. Both of those are in process. The hydrographic bill, we still have to have bilaterals with the Department of Transport, because the Department of Transport is busy with a white paper that could, according to them, take the function to the Department of Transport. But we have maintained as DOD that this has always been, this task has always been done by the Department of Defense. So the hydrographic bill is at this stage. It has gone through the DEVCOM, which is the subcommittee of the JCPS cluster, and it is chaired by the Department of Justice. And it is a requirement that there should be understanding among all government departments who are relevant. We also are busy with the CS. The requirement now by Cabinet is that all key legislation and regulations and policies should be subjected to what they call the socio-economic impact study. That also is being done. The Military Discipline Bill is also has gone through. The Chief of the Defence Force has been trying very hard to push it. However, at the DEVCOM level, there are still some concerns that the Department of Justice is raising in terms of the security of tenure and in terms of the independence of judges and so on. But the department was hoping that actually the Military Discipline Bill will be in the program, this year's program, and will be finalized this year. But there are things that are beyond our control because we have to satisfy certain requirements by the Department of Justice on this matter. And which will be then go to the judges as part of this. We do acknowledge that should you have the Military Discipline Bill accepted to and becoming law, it will give more powers to the commanders to be able to deal with matters of discipline, so you don't have to take everything to the military courts. As far as the backlogs, I think the general will be more au fait with the backlogs that these judges have dealt with.
Chairperson, can I therefore start on the issue of technology? Just to say to honorable members, where the issue of technology, the National Security Strategy have stated technology as a requirement and as a force multiplier for our borders. And the Defense Review have done the same. Subsequent to that, the Defense Force, the Military Command Council, has worked on a sensor strategy. Now, what you would find is the fact that that sensor strategy would still require funding for the sensors to be rolled out across our borders. However, there is also what we take note of. We take note also of what is available currently nationally, that we need to optimize what we have at this stage, just to minimize the porosity of our borders. And that is being done. It's a project which, if I may say, defense intelligence is working on it in terms of the sensors, not only with nationally, but even within the Department of Defense itself. So, honorable member, I agree with you fully. You are right, technology will be a force multiplier, but we need funding for it, and also what we are working on is to maximize the use of the technology that is currently available. It may not be in the defense, but elsewhere in government. There is an issue, the chairperson, I called Dr. Gamede the chairperson, because she always chairs the meeting where we are sitting more often, so my apologies. Yes, sir. I want to correct myself. Chairperson, Dr. Gamede indicated to me I need to respond as well to the question on Bayrou and hotel. I need to say, Chairperson, kindly requesting honorable members to say that with Bayrou and hotel, these are part of the strategic capital acquisition master plan, the SCAMP project which resides within the SDA. Now, we know the sensitivity of discussing matters that is within the SDA, and as a result, Chairperson, just to request that, can it be a matter that we deal with, look at it as and when we have the opportunity to discuss the SDA. We take note of what the honorable member has said, if I may, Chairperson. The other issue was members that are permanently disabled. We already have in the department members that are permanently disabled. There are rules, there are regulations on how we need to treat the members that are disabled in the department and that is being followed rigidly. We are not. When I say it's being followed rigidly, I do not imply the fact that there are no challenges here and there. There will be one or two challenges which I may not have information about for now, but we do. And once a person becomes disabled permanently, obviously what needs to be done, which is within the rules and within the regulations of government of our country, there's a way that you need to treat these people, i.e. look at where the best possible place is to utilize these members. That would be your first priority, and nothing less than that. But if it so happened, depending on the disability, I think an assessment could therefore be made. If you can't find any space anywhere, an assessment should be made to say that how best do we then employ this person. This will be treated within the rules and the regulations of government which are available for the Department of Defense for use. I am not sure, Doctor, if I have omitted one. Thank you very much.
The issue of leadership not being able to provide oversight. Here, the CFO has spoken about the financial side of it. On the performance information, reporting on performance information, we always have instructions on how to report. The challenge comes because we do not have the content management enablers. What you find is that they will, from all over the Defense Force, they provide this information, and as you roll it up sometimes, then you might find that there are gaps and inaccuracies that we always, working with APSA, resolve them. It's the monitoring, therefore, that will be more effective. Yes, you will have your SMS members, but you do need an IT system that allows you to do that. In the meantime, what we use is just a spreadsheet that we have come up with that allows us or enables us to get information and then roll it up. But it's not because of the lack of leadership. We are in discussion with our CMIS to see how they can provide us with an enabler working with CETA to manage content information. And Chair, with those, unless I've the members talked about dilapidated buildings. Obviously, General Lidwaba was here to brief the members on the works formation and how actually the establishment of this works formation has helped to halve the cost that we the cost of renovating the building. But obviously there are still challenges in that respect because they still require resources. We have limited, and they are still staffing or adding members in the works formation. The finally, Chair, from my side, I must just indicate that we are in discussions with National Treasury as far as the exit mechanism is concerned, because it will have to be a project that is agreed to with National Treasury, because they will have to fund the exit mechanism, and that will allow us to rejuvenate the Defense Force. And we also are required, National Treasury was also going to facilitate a meeting with DPSA just to make sure that from National Treasury DPSA side, you have an attractive exit mechanism that is humane, and that will make sure that you don't have people who are exited and they are unemployed or something happens to them. So that is in the pipeline, Chair, as part of the work that we've done for the defense review.
you done?
Yes, unless I've left something out.
No.
Yes.
No, honourable members, I have a suggestion. We have a motion to deal with our Interpol our report. I was thinking that if there are any outstanding questions.